And good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials. The number here at the station is 903-589-8507. I'm going to ask you a question this morning to kind of get us started in the right direction. Does anyone out there want to be smarter and happier? And maybe if you answer the question, you say, no, not really. That doesn't apply to me. I'm already about as smart as I want to be, and I'm just as happy and pleased with myself as I can be, so that doesn't apply to me. So I guess I won't be listening to this program, Dr. Morgan. But maybe you know somebody. Maybe they can't quite get it together. Well, anyway, I came across this article. I thought it was so interesting. And the thing of it is, it's free. All this information is free. And the solution is free. Anyway, here's what I came up with right here. It piqued my interest. There is a compound that is produced by the brain. It's called BDNF. Sometimes it's you get the long-term brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Anytime that I read about this, I always kind of have this mental image of Miracle Grow Fertilizer. Now, I am personally not promoting Miracle Grow Fertilizer. I have used it before, because there's something that I've used that's so superior. I have some plants at the office, and these plants have basically been rescued plants. That means they are on the clearance aisle. They're fractured and broken. They look horrible. They're for sale for 50 cents or a dollar at the most. They're not the normal price, not $12.98. And so the plants, you know, I want to rescue them. The fertilizer, you know what makes plants grow? Fish fertilizer. You can look it up. Sometimes it's called fish emulsion. They basically take fish, grind them up in a blender, probably like a Vitamixer, pour them in a bucket and put a packet of yeast like you'd use to make bread on top of it. And then bingo, just let that sucker ferment for a while and you're going to have some awesome... Although it's going to smell bad. Anyway, I'm getting distracted here. Brain-derived neurotrophic factor. You know, there's going to be some dermatologist that you talk to and you ask them, you know, should I spend some time out in the sunshine for the health of my body? And they say, no, ma'am, we are going to lock you up in a dark room. I never want any light touching your skin. That's bad. You shouldn't do that. Don't you know that you'll get skin cancer? Anyway, I came across this Dutch study that suggests that sunlight, besides it lowering cancer risk across the board and sunlight being healthy for you, they're saying that it's very protective against depression, anxiety, and dementia. Now, you're going to ask the question, do we really have a problem in America with depression, anxiety, or dementia? Oh, my goodness. Just go to the computer and type in, what are the current percentages of the American population that has anxiety, and you're going to come up with a number. I don't know what that number is because I didn't look it up, but it would be easy to do. Well, you know, think of it a different way. How many people do you know of? They're just not exactly where they need to be as far as mental, emotional, physical, spiritual. There's room for improvement. Of course, all of us could say that, right? Well, this Dutch study suggests that the sunlight protects human beings against developing depression, anxiety, and dementia. If you don't know anyone with one of these, maybe you're listening to your dermatologist and you're hiding in a dark room. Wait a second, if you're doing that, you're the one that is depressed. Anyway, sunlight increases the concentration of brain-derived neurotrophic factor in the blood. Okay, I looked this up, and some of it's interesting to me that I didn't know before. I did not realize that people that had it's under the heading of neuropsychiatric disorders. Who's ever heard of PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder? Well, I'm sure everyone has. You probably know somebody that suffers with it. And so they're showing that the lower that brain-derived neurotrophic factor is, This is where PTSD cases just don't get well or heal. So what's the solution? Free sunlight. So far, sunshine's free. The other one that I didn't understand was addiction. They're showing that people that have low levels of BDNF, they have the highest addiction levels. That's interesting to me. Also, depression, schizophrenia. As far as what you and I would, hear about, maybe if it's not depression or anxiety or PTSD, we're going to come across people that have Parkinson's, Alzheimer's disease, or certainly people that have multiple sclerosis. Yes, that has been so well studied. When you avoid the sunlight, the risk of developing multiple sclerosis, it goes up. But the other one that I didn't know of was diabetes. Anyway, I don't know why that should surprise me. But the substance is called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. You want that if you want your brain cells to grow. Okay. Here's a study right here. In the year 2012, psychologists from Leiden University, they published a study where they used data from 2,851 participants. It was in the Netherlands. Oh, they took it from the study of Netherlands Study of Depression and Anxiety. Okay. About 40% of the participants in the study, they were deemed to be very healthy. And about a quarter, almost 25%, I think it was like 26, they used antidepressants. So basically, random group of people, some people are very healthy, but about a quarter or a fourth of people are taking antidepressants. That seems to me to be quite a few people. Do you ever think that maybe 25 people out of 100, let's say you go to church tomorrow, because tomorrow's the first day of the week, and there's exactly 100 people there. Well, according to this study from the Netherlands, about a quarter of the population is taking antidepressants. I don't know if that has any relevance for here, but it just makes you think. So basically, several times during the year, the researchers, they took blood samples from the study participants, and all they're doing is trying to measure the level or the concentration of brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Maybe you've never heard of that before, but it's, in a way, it's like a hormone, which I'll just kind of cut to the chase. If your hormones are out of balance and you want your hormones to get back in balance, what are you going to do here? Well, one of the things that you should do to help yourself is be outside. Fresh air, birds, goldfish doing backflips in the pond, bees, hummingbirds, but you get sunshine on your skin. Okay, it says that brain-derived neurotrophic factor is a hormone. Maybe that's really what I'm wanting to emphasize right now in this conversation, that if you want to achieve hormone balance, you've got to be outside in order to do that. You can't live in a cave or under a rock. I'm just saying that as a figure of speech. I don't know anybody that lives under a rock. I have wondered sometimes. Anyway, let me get off that conversation there. So what does brain-derived neurotrophic factor do? Well, it's a hormone. And maybe as another point, hormones kind of run the show in the body. But it keeps the brain cells healthy, and it stimulates brain cell growth and new neural connections. You got to have those. The more neural connections you have, the better. And so it says that brain-derived neurotrophic factor, it plays one of the most important roles in cognitive abilities and learning processes. So what do you do when there is an individual that no longer wants to learn? They don't read, they don't study, they don't write, they don't make an effort to learn or figure something out. Maybe they've lost their cognitive abilities and you're thinking they've lost it. Well, start thinking they have low levels of brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So in neurological disorders such as Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, there's one called Huntington's chorea or Huntington's disease, as well as depression, anxiety, or like I mentioned earlier, post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, how do we prevent those diseases? Well, you need some miracle grow for the brain. That's the key. The brain has got to be able to grow new neural connections. And how do you do that? It needs a hormone called BDNF. Actually, here's the title of the study. Serum BDNF concentrations show strong seasonal variation and correlations with the amount of available ambient sunlight. Anyway, to make a long story short, during the summer months, and we're talking about June, July, August, September, October, November, BDNF tests great, but once you start hitting January, February, it gets really low come March, April, and even May. It takes a dip. That means you're prone to your body breaking down. Anyway, not good. Okay, let me see. What else do the researchers say? This is just cutting to the chase. They show that the more hours of sun means a higher concentration of brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Anyway, so they're showing that you wanna not be depressed. You want to be happy. Give your brain the hormone that it needs to operate on all eight cylinders. Go outside. Obviously, I want to give full disclosure to everybody. I'm not telling you to lay on a beach for 16 hours a day and destroy your skin. I don't think that would be good. I don't have it here in front of me, but last week I was typing in a question in the computer because I demand the computer answer me the way that I want. It never does. But they were showing that people that take cod liver oil every single day, they have the best chance of protecting their skin against damage from the sunlight. So if you're going to be out in the sun, which you should, maybe you need some omega-3 fatty acids to help protect your skin from being damaged by the sunlight. And also use the common sense that God gave you, which means to not overdo it or let your body get conditioned. Here's another article. I'm not going to read this one, but it's just the title. It says a combination of physical exercise and fish oil makes you more clever. That's the article. Do you know anybody that's really, really clever? Well, they're probably exercising and taking fish oil, right? Okay. That's article number one. This next one, man, I like this one too because it's free. It's saying, what's the title of the article? It comes from Sweden. It says, according to a Swedish study published in the year 2016, you know, that wasn't that long ago, 8 years, it was published in the journal Medicine. They're saying that all this talk about dermatologists saying that sunlight is just as dangerous as smoking a pack of cigarettes or drinking a case of beer or eating a junk food diet. No, no, no. You know for a fact that if you put, you know, I was reading a chapter of a book about the immune system. And they're saying, folks, anytime you smoke a cigarette, you've got cancer cells growing in your lungs. If you're smoking, there's cancer growing. Now, the question is whether that cancer takes off and grows out of control to form a tumor or spread throughout the body. But it's interesting, in this one unique study, and I don't think I've ever read this before, but if you're smoking cigarettes, those thousands of toxic chemicals, they're so bad for you. You got cancer growing. That's just all there is to it. It's just a question of, do you want to help your immune system defeat the cancer before it gets out of control? That's what the immune system's for, right? Okay. So you know that the more you smoke cigarettes, the higher your risk of lung cancer. That's just the way it works. But sunlight's different. The only reason I'm saying that, because I've heard dermatologists say in print that being in the sun is like smoking cigarettes. Well, folks, it is not. This study kind of proves it. The more sunlight that hits your skin, the higher the risk of skin cancer, according to dermatologists. No, 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 no. According to a Swedish study published in 2016 in the Journal of Medicine, this narrative is incorrect. In the study, sunlight actually protects against skin cancer in general, and against skin cancer in particular. Here's a study right here. This comes from the Karolinska Institute from Sweden. They took 30,000 Swedish women from the years 1990 to 1992, and they followed them to the year 2011. So basically, that's pretty close to 20 years. It was only women, though. There wasn't one man in the study, just in case you're wondering. And it was called Melanoma Southern Sweden Study. So I guess they were trying to determine, does sun cause melanoma? Anyway, when the study began, the women were between 20 years of age all the way up to 64. They had answered questions about how often they exposed themselves to the sunlight. For example, either sunbathing, swimming outside, maybe gardening while you're barefooted, wearing shorts and a tank top, that sort of thing. They also asked the women whether they ever used a tanning bed. Oh, I don't know where that comes from. Oh, I'm trying to look at the stat, the number on it. But anyway, that doesn't matter. Sorry, I'm just thinking to myself. Here's basically the results. The women who avoided natural sunlight and or a tanning bed. Remember, this is Sweden. Think of cold, not as much sun as what we have here in Texas. The women who avoided sunlight, they were the most likely ones to die. I'm looking at the chart right now. They have women that avoid sun exposure, women that get moderate sun exposure, and women that get the most active sun exposure. That means sunlight actually resting on their face or their neck or their skin or their ankles. Okay? I'm telling you, folks, by the time that they were 84 years old, man, you wanna have one of the greatest risks of all time for dying? Don't get in the sun. How about that? Okay, here's the results right here. It says, remarkably, the risk of death in the smoking women who received a lot of sunlight was just as great as the non-smoking women who avoid ultraviolet light, which means there's something about sunlight that's very, very protective to the human body. Maybe, and they try to answer the question. I don't know that I agree with it, but anyway. Among both smokers and non-smokers, the women with the greatest exposure to ultraviolet light from the sun, guess what they had? They had the absolute lowest risk of developing cancer and thus dying. And this was true for all forms of cancer, even a squamous cell carcinoma or a melanoma or a basal cell carcinoma. I mean, I can't really show you the chart that I'm looking at, but if you looked at this, you'd say, are you telling me, Dr. Morgan, that if I get out in the sunlight, that it might actually have benefits to keep me from being depressed and anxious and developing Alzheimer's or Parkinson's? Yes, that's what I'm saying. Does it help me not die early? Yes, that's exactly what it says. Okay, they also have a category, and the print is so small, I'm not even going to attempt to read the stats to you, but it showed a greatly reduced risk of death from cardiovascular disease. So historically, if you live in America, that's going to be what you die from. That's the number one cause of death, cardiovascular disease. Whether that's a stroke, a heart attack, a blood clot in your lungs, just anything to do with your arteries or your heart. It says under the mechanism, the researchers were unable to deduce from their study why exposure to ultraviolet light, meaning sunlight, reduces the risk of death in their study. They say that vitamin D may play a role, but they're not really sure if that's the first or if that's the full story. Another one, which I find interesting, a possible additional explanation is that sunlight causes skin cells to produce endorphins, and that's what helps your body attenuate stress. You ever feel stressed and just want to go outside and sit in a chair and just soak up the sun? Well, it's causing your body to produce endorphins, and that's helping get rid of stress. Okay, another possibility is the more sunlight you have, they call it energy-rich daylight. That's the way they promote it, which I kind of like that. After all, you are a solar-charged battery, right? You got to have sunlight. Well, the more you're out in the sun, this is what breaks down melatonin in your body. So that by evening time, your body starts making more melatonin, like an extra amount. And they've shown conclusively that melatonin has a strong anti-cancer effect. But it's free. Anyway, there's such a thing as the optimal amount of sunlight, isn't there? Okay, this is what I typed into the computer. I typed in, what about infections and sunlight? Okay, here's what I read from Georgetown University in 2016. T-cells, and T stands for the thymus gland, even if you've never heard of this before, the largest gland of your immune system is called the thymus gland. I promise you, you want your thymus gland to be the optimal size, the optimal shape. You want it to function to keep you in great working order. You need a thymus gland. So here they are. They're looking at T cells, whether they happen to be a T helper cell or a T killer cell. T killer cells are really what you want a lot of. When people live a very, very long time, they usually have plenty of T killer cells. People that die of natural causes when they're 57 years old, that's probably because they just don't have enough T cells, because that's your immune system. You need your immune system to keep your body in good repair. So T cells, they need to move in order to do their work. It's that simple. They can't just sit still. They can't be sluggish. Kind of like you need to move in order to do your work. And the more that you move, probably the more efficiently you get your work done. So when the T cells can move, they can actually get to the site of the infection and they can orchestrate a good immune response. Now, the gentleman in the study from Georgetown University in 2016, his name is Ahern, A-H-E-R-N, Ahern. This study shows that sunlight directly activates key immune cells by increasing their movement. Oh my goodness, the guy's a genius. So being in the sunlight actually does you a great service. Now here's what else I looked up. This was interesting. Do you know what hydrogen peroxide is? Well, of course you do. If you have received a gash on a finger or a foot or the leg and it's bad, what might you pour on it to do emergency medicine before you can get to the emergency room and get stitches? Well, if you're smart, you may have some hydrogen peroxide. Well, did you know that sunlight? I just learned this morning. It's found that when you put your skin in the sun or you have sunlight on your skin, that causes your cells to make hydrogen peroxide in your thymus cells or your T cells, which cause your cells to move. Remember, movement is critical. You got to get those white blood cells to move to the infection or to the tumor in order to kill them. I did look up also, and I couldn't find a reference on it. They say that sunlight kills vampires. Now, I couldn't find the scientific reference, but if it says it on the internet, it must be true. So if you know of any vampires in the area, supposedly you should just, you know, do like a lemonade stand and, you know, oatmeal raisin cookies and say, special buy one get one free for vampires, and that way when you trick them to come outdoors in the sunlight, well, you've done the world a favor. Anyway, if you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open. It's 903-589-8507. So if you have a question and you're kind of angling toward what do I do to help myself, but I don't want to take a drug that may have horrific side effects, I think just from yesterday only, I think there were two people that I saw that had such horrific side effects just from taking antibiotics. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing great. Hey, I got bit by a tick, actually two, but one was in more than the other. And what do I need to do naturally? My doctor, of course, prescribed antibiotics, some oxytetracycline, but I'm not 100% sure.
Probably doxycycline.
Okay, there it is, doxycycline.
Is that what it says?
Okay. Yeah, I believe that's right. What it is.
Well, that's still a tetracycline drug. By the way, that's the one, if you take it, they don't want you in the sunlight at all.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm on the farm all the time. So
oh,
I was
no.
Like, hmm.
You're going to have to wear a beekeeper suit and keep an umbrella around you all day long, aren't you? Okay, well, I don't know that I can legally answer that question, but can I tell you what I would do if it were me?
Sure.
Okay, how long ago did you have the tick bite?
A week.
Wait, okay, you're saying, what do I do about tick bite, but you're a week removed from it?
Yes.
All right, yes. Well, I'll still have a go at it. Do you know what Indian healing clay is?
I do.
Okay, so if you were to make like a mud pack, you know what the woman told me yesterday? A lady came to see me, and I'm not going to give names or details, but she was just saying her daughter was stung by a wasp, very painful. She immediately mixed up some Indian healing clay with a little bit of water and put the mud on there, and guess what happened? All the pain just magically disappeared.
Out.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And so, to me, I think that's got to be one of the most interesting things on the planet, is what are the properties... You know, I don't have any problem calling it a living earth or a living dirt. So if it has kaolin clay or calcium bentonite clay or different forms of bentonite, you could mix that up with either water or apple cider vinegar, and you could make like a muddy poultice.
Yeah.
And you lay over the area that you're trying to draw out and to heal. But it has a magical property. When I say magic, I don't mean... throwing down a rod and having a snake form. That's not what I'm referring to. Not those dark magic arts, but just means it's sometimes it's amazing what happens. I remember one time I had a woman come see me, and she was saying, Dr. Morgan, this pain that I have in my chest is so severe and so annoying. It never goes away. I've been to 7 different doctors. Nobody can help me. But what it was is they removed a breast cancer, a tumor. But they did a procedure called a lumpectomy where they cut out very significantly around the tumor so it left like a gaping hole, but they tried to sew it back up. But it would never stop hurting. I think she told me it took exactly 7 clay pack applications where she made mud and laid it on or rubbed it on the area.
Wow.
And you just leave it on for about 20 minutes and let it air dry, but it starts drawing and pulling out all that toxic debris like a magnet.
Okay.
I really wish I could have an intelligent response for you and say, this is exactly how it works. I'm not really sure. But then again...
Well, I had limes, you know, I had limes in my 20s. And so they immediately, the bullseye, the whole 9 yards. And they immediately put me on antibiotic, and I've been fine. But my brothers got it, and they're not. One has RA, and the other one just,
I don't know.
You
know what they used to use for that?
I needed something more.
What they used to do with that back in the 1960s is they would give them gold shots or gold injections. Guess what's in a gold shot?
Gold?
You're right. You get an A plus. Gold. Because they were trying to find some way to kill the chronic infection like tuberculosis or Lyme, something like that. But anyway, the clay... You can literally put that anywhere you want. If you have a problem that just won't resolve and go away, you got nothing to lose by trying it. I think a big tub of it goes for like about $9.97.
Oh, I have some here. But I was putting castor oil on it because one scabbed over. So I worried about, did the head get left in there? And the other one was just totally fine.
Well, did you get your husband to look at it with
my imagination? Well, no, he's been gone, but yes.
Okay.
I'm going to have that.
So, do you have a friend that could take a magnifying glass and just inspect it and try to determine if there's still something in there?
Sure.
Did the doctor not look at it?
I didn't go to the doctor. I just called her.
And she still gave you antibiotics?
Uh-huh.
You know what's going to happen, don't you? There's not going to be any more doctor visits for stuff like this. It's all going to be an AI computer.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of glad.
And then
I didn't want to go in.
And then the AI computer is going to say, what were you thinking, taking a picnic and laying in the tall grass for 3 hours at a time? I don't know how to... How do you communicate with a robot? Anyway. So the Indian healing clay.
Through my chart.
That's really interesting. An examination is no longer required. You don't have to have a blood test to take it seriously, because what if you actually had an active infection, or what if they needed more precision or to do something else?
Have me definitely come in, but I do want to get a tighter run. But I heard that you can't get it done for a month.
No, I don't know the answer to that. That may be true.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Well,
my research.
But what I like is, I want you to get ahead of the curve on this, and I want you to do everything within your power to help yourself.
Right.
So another thing that I would think about, and it goes back to the conversation this morning. You know what vitamin D is, don't you?
I sure do.
Well, I think it's really, really critical. Now, I did type in that question. What do you do if you have an active infection on the skin? Should you expose it to sunlight? Well, when I read what the dermatologist said, they said absolutely not. And the reasoning is because you might develop some pigmentation where you have the infection. And I thought, let me read somebody else's opinion. And the truth of it is, when you expose your skin to sunlight, even if it's been damaged, like with an infection from a tick bite, you're actually helping to cause that area. You're helping your immune system actually travel to the infection and clean it up. So what would you rather have? A little bit of pigmentation potentially, or would you rather be well and healthy and not have to deal with this horrible infection the rest of your life?
Gotcha. Yes, exactly. Well, one more question now that you touched on vitamin D. I take vitamin D 50,000 a week. And then I'm off on the weekends.
Do you know which form it is? D2 or D3?
I don't, but it's with K.
Well, I'm going to guess it's vitamin D2.
D2? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the difference between them. And I went off it for 2 weeks and went for my yearly. My blood work showed I was low.
Well,
I
what
was
do you
29.
What do you think that means?
29. I'm malabsorption. So
well,
why am I not absorbing it?
Well,
I'm in
I don't
the sunlight.
I don't think that's it.
Oh, it's the wrong D?
No, I don't think that's it either. I think the issue... Well, I know this is going to be unusual the way that I say this, but here's what I've got to think of. The vast majority of vitamin D in the human body is supposed to be just made because you're outside working on the farm, which is what you are. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you exposed to natural ultraviolet sunlight?
Sadly, yes.
Ma'am, you were built for hard farm work and hard labor, so don't give me that. Okay, so...
Not anymore.
No, you were built for hard labor in the sunlight all day long. But anyway, if it's low like that, one system that I have to think of is either the kidneys or the gallbladder is weak. So if you have a test and you've been taking it and you're still not processing it, I have to think the gallbladder is weak. Every night when you go to bed,
I don't have one anymore.
Ma'am, would you stop telling me
that was a bad decision I made.
Would you stop telling me that all your body parts have been removed when I want to talk about them?
You can still talk about them, but that was a bad decision I made.
All right. Do you have both hemispheres of your brain, or they have been removed too?
Well, depends on who you ask.
Well, they're not on the phone right now. It's just you and me.
I think there's
probably two listeners listening to our conversation. Okay, so do you take cod liver oil every day?
No, I don't.
Well, that's a huge mistake. Huge. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm being a little bit dramatic there, but let me say it this way. There was a study just done from Japan, and if I'm not mistaken, it was only done on men, so it's not to exclude women, but that's just the way some studies are done. But cod liver oil, that is one of the essential substances. That's what makes up all the cell membranes, whether it's a red blood cell, a liver cell, a kidney cell, a bone cell. You've got to have omega-3 fatty acids. And I'm going to encourage you that the men that had, I think their concentration on a blood test, they looked at cell membrane omega-3 fatty acid concentrations, but I think once they hit about 9.5%, now this is just me talking loosely, so take it with a grain of salt, but those men were bulletproof. They had no diseases, no problems. They lived an average of 5 problem-free years longer than all the other men. So there's a reason why omega-3 fatty acids, that should be part of the good. So if you're not going to eat salmon or ocean fish like halibut, you're going to take fish oil. It's really one of the greatest superfoods of all time.
I do, but you said cod liver oil.
Well, that's because cod liver oil has natural vitamin D in it. That's why I'm saying that.
Oh, okay.
So I think there's some tactical advantage between the vitamin A levels and the vitamin D levels. Now, this is the next thing. I'm going to go off rails here because it's not going to make sense, but I promise you this makes sense to me. That's all that matters. You've got to have magnesium. Anytime that you think a person has low vitamin D and they can't get it back up to speed, it's because also they have a magnesium deficiency that's not being corrected.
And what type would you recommend?
Well, there's only two forms of magnesium that I use. I either use magnesium lactate or I use one called Easy Mag. And that's a plant-based. It's like a green chlorophyll tablet. But that's what I... And that's just my routine. I take a bunch of those every night before I go to bed. And the other thing that I'm looking for is, if a person tells me that their sleep consistently improves and they sleep deeper and they stay asleep longer, then I know that we're starting to tap into trying to restore magnesium. Let me say one or two more things. There is an enzyme in the human body. You can look it up. It's called a kinase. K-I-N-A-S-E. Kinase. So here's an example. Somebody goes to the hospital, emergency room. They got chest pain. First thing they're going to measure is an enzyme called CK. That's just short for creatine kinase. When that's elevated, it's a pretty good clue they're having a heart attack. It's just showing excessive damage to the heart muscle. Are you with me on that?
Mm-hmm.
So if I say it in a different way, even if there's... Now, I'm going to guess here, if I'm wrong about this, there's somewhere between 600 to 700 kinase enzymes in the human body. But without them, you can't live. Kinases are what keep everything in good repair. I'll say it that way. But every kinase enzyme, it's magnesium dependent, meaning if you do not have enough magnesium, there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't work right. And so that one study that I looked at years ago showed that all they did was measure magnesium levels. So if you go to a doctor and you request a serum magnesium test, in this study they looked at 2.3 versus 2.4. And it was huge. Men and women that had magnesium levels above 2.4, they outdid everybody else when it came to greater health and quality of life and being able to move and to function. People that had magnesium levels at 2.3 or below, they're the ones that had all the health problems. So I don't care if the normal range is 1.8 to 2.4. That's baloney. We got to look at the studies. And so if somebody says, but Dr. Morgan, mine's 2.2, that's way, way too low.
I wish I had mine in front of me to know what it was.
Well, you can go, excuse me, you can go look it up.
I just had it done, and it is low.
What's low?
My magnesium. That and the D were low.
Well, all I was doing is I was trying to connect where you see low vitamin D, you got to start thinking there's a magnesium issue. Mm-hmm. You're just not making enough kinase enzymes. Now, I'm not saying that I understand all the mechanisms or the connections, but here's what I would say. If your gallbladder's gone, this means you better double your efforts and make doubly sure that you really start replenishing your magnesium. Now, I'm going to tell you the truth on this. I'm not saying you're going to like it, but it takes 40 weeks when somebody has low magnesium. If they get after it and stay on task, it takes 40 weeks to get it back up to speed again. 40. Not 4 minutes, 40 weeks. And that was a study that came from the year 2018. And I was reading that, I thought, man, I've never read that before. 40 weeks? I better do my job and tell people it takes 40 weeks.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, but you know what? What if you just take one bottle of it and say, "Eh, I'm good." No, you're not.
And would you recommend me taking a higher dose of both D and magnesium since I'm low?
Well, I really don't know anything about you other than your gallbladder's gone. I would say this.
I'm going to have to come in.
Well, you tell me, how much do you value your life and your health and your future?
Pretty much.
Okay,
pretty
so much. We got a mystery, and so I've already given you very good clues. I've said cod liver oil.
Yeah.
You can write that down and say, what do I have to do? And, you know, even if you say, let me look up the studies for myself and see if what he's saying is correct. Well, that's fine. Do it. And then you can look at different forms of magnesium, but those are probably the two that I use the most of. I had a woman that's, okay, in case she's listening, I don't mean this in disrespectful, but she's well into her 90s. But she's had decades of severe leg pain. Decades. Nobody can help her. Misery, hurts all the time. Every night is torture because her legs are hurting. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I give her only Easy Mag. That's it. It's just food-based magnesium. And guess what? All her pain magically stops. Of course, that makes me look really intelligent or something. Like, I really came up with a super magic for anyway. But, I mean, all we're doing is we're looking. Now, answer this question for me. And I think I already know what the answer is, so I'm not trying to be a smart aleck. But if I ask you, the number 10 represents the highest quality of sleep of all time. You fall asleep easily, you stay asleep, you're totally refreshed when you wake up, you're completely renewed and rejuvenated. 10 is excellent. 0 is the pits. Sorry. I'm such a horrible person.
To start to fall asleep is a 10. Breezy, breezy. 3 o'clock, it's, I'm awake.
Well, that's a magnesium deficiency. Because yes, because you've got to have magnesium in order to allow detoxification to take place within the liver. So if you're waking up wide awake at 3 o'clock, that's your liver, or 2 o'clock in the morning, your liver is struggling mightily. And so it's stressed out. So it's probably releasing some adrenaline, which is making you wake up and you stay awake for an hour. Because it takes about an hour to burn the adrenaline. Yeah.
Yep. So, and then I'm back to sleep.
And so I would say also the adrenal glands, they have kind of a role to play in this, and the kidneys do too. So it's a matter of just trying to, that's really what a doctor's supposed to do, and I don't see how they can do it on the tele-robot doc. But anyway.
Exactly.
So if you, we need to connect the dots and find out where's the greatest area of weakness. And if it happens to be the kidneys are weak or your bile duct, which is your new gallbladder, we need to run toward that and find a way to support it in such a way where you get better.
Okay.
All right.
Last question real quick.
No, you only said, you are... I can't do it. I've got to give somebody else a chance. You've already had two.
Okay.
There's people trying to call and anyway.
That's right. That's
I mean, okay. didn't I give you plenty of time?
You gave me plenty of time.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. See you later. Bye-bye.
All right. If you want to join me on the radio, I'm getting people calling the other number, but if you'll dial in 903-589-8507. I was thinking of you when I picked up the phone. Yes, I was. Hi, this is Dr.
Hey,
Morgan.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for your call, ma'am.
You bet. Hey, I'm calling on behalf of my 12-year-old grandson. He had COVID probably 2 or 3 years ago, and he is just really struggling with rapid heartbeat, dizziness, lightheadedness. And I was wondering if you could suggest anything that we might be able to do for him.
Yeah. Can I cover one term first?
Sure.
Okay. The term that they're using in medicine, they call it viral reservoir. You know what a reservoir is. If I said, let's go to Cedar Creek Lake Reservoir, or Lake Palestine is a reservoir, or Richland Chambers Reservoir, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I sure do, yeah.
Okay, well, the way that they're using this term, this is like a new term that I'm reading about that relates to the topic of COVID, or if you want to even say long COVID, it starts to give you the idea that maybe they at one time had this viral infection, but for one reason or the other, they got over it, sort of, but it just never left one particular part of the body, and that's where I'm going with this.
Okay.
So, with the term viral reservoir, they're saying essentially the people got over the bad case of COVID, but the COVID itself is still living in one particular gland or tissue or organ, like the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that before?
No.
Okay, so that's what we're working with. So if your 12-year-old grandson is having rapid heartbeat, we've got to start tackling what is it that's allowing the... Can I ask you some simple questions? I know I'm going sidetracked here, but does he have a good diet?
Not really.
Okay, so if I say to you the number one predictor of a chronic low-grade viral infection that never, ever goes away is the amount of refined sugar that a young man eats, would you believe that?
I believe that.
So here's my sales pitch. If I could convince him to eat meat and vegetables and fruit, I think we could get enough energy in his body to turn this around, probably.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a good start.
The other thing that I didn't cover with the lady that I just talked to is there is a relationship between magnesium levels and rapid heartbeat and chronic infections. And so if he's 12 years old and has a rapid heartbeat, I'm thinking, how can I feed and nourish his body in such a way to give his heart a chance to function better? Well, magnesium is one of those things, and I think I've already said that the two forms of magnesium that I like, there's one called Easy Mag, but that's just the brand name. But magnesium lactate, I really like that a lot because I get really good results with it. And so you could start telling him to consume magnesium, but if there's any way we could cut out the junk food and the sugar, if he needs something sweet, we'll give him like a bowl of cherries or raspberries, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that might work?
I think that's a great start. I think we'll give that a shot.
And we could force him at gunpoint to eat steak.
He loves steak, so that's my problem there.
So we're not going to have to twist his arm on that one. The other thing...
He likes good food. He just eats too much of the junk food along with it.
Well, and that's kind of the deal killer right there. That's why I brought up the sugar thing. You know, the reason they gave vitamin A the name vitamin A is because it's the anti-infection vitamin. So if he was willing to eat, say, broccoli or mangoes or take cod liver oil is actually a source of vitamin A. And you may remember when you were like a little girl, your mother made you stand at attention and she would put a spoon of cod liver oil in your mouth before you went to school. Isn't that true?
That's true.
Okay, so he most likely has a chronic viral infection secondary to nutrient deficiencies. And so if we could give the kid vitamin C, that would be a gold mine. If we could give him probably
vitamin C?
Yes, ma'am.
You said vitamin C?
Yes,
okay.
Ma'am. If he were... Yes, ma'am. Absolutely, yes. And if he were my son, I would think about giving him just a little bit of zinc. At 12 years old, I'm thinking 20 milligrams at the most. And that's the sort of thing that should be taken with food. But magnesium and cod liver oil, those are going to be home runs for him.
Okay, so how much magnesium should he take a day, do you think?
Well, if you find some magnesium lactate, just have him take what the manufacturer recommends on the bottle. So if it says 3 capsules a day or 3 tablets a day is the recommended dose, since he's 12, I'd go ahead and give him an adult dose on the magnesium. I mean, the worst thing that would happen is he might have to go to the bathroom a little bit more than normal.
Yeah.
What I'm always after, I know this is a backhanded way of saying it, but unless somebody has 2 really, really good, well-formed bowel movements a day, I always think they're not getting enough magnesium.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. I appreciate your help on that. We'll get started on that and see how it goes.
You're welcome. Thanks for your phone call. I appreciate you calling.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye. The number here at station is 903-589-8507. Now, if you have 25 bowel movements a day, you might be overdoing it. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you today, Dr. Morgan?
I am great, sir. Thanks for your call.
Well, I'm calling for my wife. She's had Well, this morning she can't talk, or she'd have called.
She can't talk. What is it, laryngitis?
I think so. She's had some swollen lymph glands, and she's been hanging on for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, or a long time.
Have you looked in her mouth?
Comes and goes. Yeah, I have.
Are her tonsils swollen?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I can see tonsils. I know she had a couple. She looked a little bit red one day, but to me it doesn't look irritating red. It's just, you know, her neck is sore, and she went to the urgent care, and she takes Feverfew, and she takes all kinds of stuff. And after going, the doctor finally said, you know, you're doing the right thing. And he gave her some medicine for cough, but she really wasn't coughing that much. She gargles with salt water. And, I mean, it's just kind of dragging on. That's the main issue. And she asked me to call and see if you had any ideas.
Yeah, I do. Since she can gargle salt water, why don't we try some Bragg's apple cider vinegar with half water and half vinegar and have her gargle with that for about 25, 30 seconds, about 3 times a day. Spit the stuff out afterwards.
Okay, apple cider vinegar.
Mm-hmm. Number Bragg's next, this is going to be your job. This is the hardest job of all time. I need you to start rubbing castor oil directly over all the swollen lymph nodes of her neck. So you might have to rub some on the lower jaw, over her throat, neck. So you can do that several times a day, and let's see if we can start to get an improvement. Now, if it were me, I would do a mud pack using the Indian healing clay and just make mud and rub on the neck and the throat. It feels weird when it dries. She'll find out real quick. She'll think that you're trying to cover her in a terracotta pot and bake her, but you're not. But just think of it this way. Even after she leaves it on for 20 minutes, you can just hose her off in the front yard, and nobody will know.
Right.
Isn't that a brilliant plan?
Well, it sounds kind of interesting.
Now,
yeah.
The other thing that I would tell you, if I had this like she's describing, I would probably go to the store and get a liquid echinacea golden seal. And even though it's not going to taste great, I think I would kind of just put a few drops straight on my tongue and just kind of suck on it.
A liquid echinacea and golden seal.
Golden seal, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if she does that through... Oh, I'm sorry, it's a liquid tincture?
Okay. She may even have that, I don't know.
You know what, if she does, then even all the better. We can start to do that now.
Okay.
Does she go outside the house frequently?
Oh, yeah, she goes out. But, well, okay. She goes out and works in the garden, but she isn't usually doing it at night in the dark instead of in the day.
So at 1 o'clock in the morning, she's pulling weeds. I got it.
Well, no, not quite that late. But,
I know. I'm just trying to be funny.
I know. But I keep saying, you know, the sunshine would be better, but anyway. Of course, we haven't had that much sunshine. All we've had is rain and clouds.
Well, I think today is supposed to be a beautiful day a little bit later. Is she taking the Feverfew to kind of combat migraine headaches?
No, she didn't have headaches.
What's she taking the Feverfew for?
She said it, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just curious if you did.
Yeah. She does have echinacea pills.
Well, then, let's go with that right there. Now, are they in tablet form?
I think so.
That's the best. She can just suck on those.
She also takes stinging nettle root and fever. She takes Feverfew and stinging nettle root together.
She might be doing those for allergies or that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of men take stinging nettle for their prostate, but I seriously doubt that's what she's taking it for.
Yeah, no. She also wears a hat when she does go outside.
But she's not having prostate problems, I'm pretty sure.
No. And we take magnesium.
That's good.
400 milligram caps.
If I knew it was the tonsils, a lot of the old school doctors, I'm not talking about the robot doctors on Teladoc, I'm talking about real doctors, they used to actually paint some clear iodine directly over the tonsils, if that was what was the case when they're trying to get the tonsils to heal. But I mean, the poor thing, if she's got swollen lymph nodes, I would guess her tonsils are swollen. I mean, the poor thing can't talk.
Oh, what, your lymph nodes aren't swollen?
No, she doesn't have tonsils.
Okay. Well, she has five sets of tonsils. They just probably remove the palatine tonsils. And 87% of the time they grow back anyway if they're removed as a child.
Okay.
You know, you don't have to worry about your wife talking back to you today because she can't talk. So this is going to be a great day all the way around.
It's worse. It's worse when she can't talk.
No. Oh, no, I didn't think about that. Just scratch that last statement. No,
she
the poor
to take
thing.
Something's called respiratory defense and declare, and respiratory support and defense.
I probably have, I'm going to tell you what I would do if it was me. If I couldn't talk because I was so inflamed, there's an old technique where you take cloves of garlic and you ferment them in raw honey. I don't expect you have those, but garlic is like the cure of all cures when you can't talk. So you can just go to the grocery store, and probably because she's upset with you, you should take about 4 hours to walk down the aisles instead of 4 minutes. But if you bring back minced garlic and she puts a spoonful of that in her mouth with some ginger, she'll be in a much better. Yeah, just get her like the big chunk of ginger over there in the produce aisle. It looks like a gnarly root.
Yeah, we've got that. We drink ginger and ginger and.
No, I want her to take a bite out of the root and just chew it up and eat it. That'll take care of it, probably.
Okay.
I mean, nothing. Does anything really say I love you for Mother's Day more than a jar of minced garlic and a big chunk of ginger root? No, the answer is no.
Well, a couple of days ago, a friend said that he has throat problems. He eats raw onion.
There you go.
She went out and grabbed an onion that she'd grown and ate it, and she was better immediately. So.
Oh, my goodness. This is amazing. Maybe we should repeat that again.
Eat raw onion.
They used to a long time ago. Every time there were evil spirits in the house, they would cut an onion open and leave it by the bed. I'm just joking. I'm so sorry. I need to stick with the program. We need to stick with healing and repair, right?
I mean, I'm doing what I can to help her. And,
oh, of course you are.
Lemon water.
Yes, absolutely. You're like the greatest husband of all time, I promise you.
And if I try to get her to eat hot sauce, I think that would help. But.
Yes, I think a spoonful of Tabasco in the mouth right now would be excellent. I mean, what could go wrong? I mean, I'm in Jacksonville right now. Where are you?
Chandler,
that doesn't affect me at all if you give her Tabasco with onions and garlic. I'm safe.
To me, I like hot sauce when I don't feel well.
Well, and that's because it helps your body heal, and you're really right about that. That would all probably help her a lot, and I would rather get her well sooner rather than later.
Well, I would too. It's frustrating.
And that way you can go fishing this afternoon.
Whatever. do a home repair project. That's what I like.
Well, your home repair project is a broken throat or voice right now. We got to work on that one.
I know it.
Well, no, you're doing great. All those things are great ideas. Give them a shot. Let's see if we can get her well.
Okay, I'll find the vinegar next. Do I need to give it to her straight or diluted?
Yeah, half water, half vinegar.
Okay.
But it has to be apple cider vinegar. I don't mean white vinegar. Don't use white vinegar.
No, we have apple cider. We have some organic
apple
cider vinegar.
Perfect, perfect.
Unfiltered, raw.
Well, good deal. Well, let me know how it turns out, and I hope you have a great day.
All right.
Give my very best to your wife. She'll get there.
Okay.
All right, thanks, sir. Uh-huh, bye-bye. Mm-hmm.